Hi.
Hi, Benny, how you doing?
Oh, fine, be good.
The House Committee on Community and Regional Affairs will come to order at 3:19. In attendance is Representative Phillips, Representative Cato, Representative McBride, and myself, Representative Miller. First item of order we'll take up today is House Joint Resolution 59, disapproving the local boundary commission recommendations of the annexation of territory to the city of Haynes. We have in attendance Representative Gall, which has sponsored the resolution, and at this time I'll ask him to come to the table to answer any questions that he might have. At this time, I'd also like to state that the mayor of Haynes, which was supporting the annexation, has been asked to come and testify. However, I guess he didn't make it. But he was informed about the meeting last week.
In person? Testify in person?
To testify, because he had indicated that he would like to testify. And the invitation was extended, however, he's not here, so. Go ahead, Representative Gall.
Thank you. I could briefly review, if the committee would like, the main points that led to it, but if you don't want to hear it, I'll answer any questions.
I think we all heard it pretty well on the Wednesday meeting. However, if there are any questions of the committee,
I brought the various legal opinions and things, if you want any of that material read or copied for you or anything of that maps, whatever you need.
Is there any questions? Seeing none?
No.
I'll ask for a motion.
I would move that we move HJR 3059 out of committee with individual recommendations.
Is there objection? Hearing no objections, so ordered.
I might take this opportunity to thank you all for your courtesy. I appreciate it. I believe that Senator Eliason's projections are correct, that the Senate version will pass the Senate today and probably be coming over the next meeting of the legislatures. Thank you again.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, Mike.
I'll go ahead and start this right here.
What were you saying, Ben?
Oh, I had was able to have some time with Danny came in and kissed me.
Oh.
Bibolo and Kimberly. And it was rather interesting when they talked about the mine and the railroad and the opening the road for truck traffic the whole time. Wow, what a bundle of worms that is, Randy.
Okay, next we'll take up some amendments that were made last year to House Bill 172. Legal would like us to reconfirm any amendments that we made last year before they incorporate them into the new bill. I will state at this time it's my intention, as soon as we get the new bill with the amendments incorporated, it'll be my intention to move the bill onto the next committee, a referral. So first of all, let's go to amendment number one. I believe they're all in your packet there. And amendment number one clarifies the participation of a municipal employee or official in instances where the employee or official has substantial financial interest that may constitute a conflict of interest. Then there were some grammar changes on the amendment. So at this time, I'd like to ask that a motion to,
reaffirm that you passed.
Right, a motion to reaffirm that it was passed.
I so move.
Is there objection? So ordered. Amendment number two is the removal of the requirements of determining the grounds for a recall election. And it replaces it with legal grounds and providing reason for and amends the percentages to constitute a recall election from 25% to 35%. It's my personal opinion that I have a real problem with this amendment. And I will state my reasons. Then I'll open it up for discussion. I'm sure that we all get this Legislators magazine, which goes around. And in the state of Michigan, where a large tax increase was passed, two legislators so far have been recalled for voting for that tax increase. And we all know part of being a legislator sometimes is unpopular positions of voting for tax increases. And but if this can extend down to local government where sometimes the reasons for a recall can be quite petty and really on grounds not called for, but under this amendment I'm afraid it would open it up to such ground. So therefore I'll open it up for discussion for the committee. Representative McBride.
I see Juneau's municipal attorney is in the crowd, and I wonder, I believe you testified on this last year, if I recall. Maybe you could give us a quick summary of if it would be the chair's.
That would be very proper. State your name and association, please.
Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Lee Sharp. I'm the attorney for the city and borough of Juneau. The current assembly has not taken a position one way or the other on which way this recall provision ought to go. The prior assembly was very much in favor of stiffening it up, that is, making the grounds even more narrow so that you knew exactly what you could and couldn't be recalled for, and also increasing the percentage required for signatures. I do not know what the current assembly feels. I was on the committee that originally drafted the 172. And that was a debate, and it's been a debate ever since this has come out. There are those who feel that you should not have grounds because public officials ought to be recalled for any reason at all, for any sort of dissatisfaction. The trade-off that was offered was, instead of requiring 25% and grounds, we'll require 35% signatures and no grounds. That was sort of the compromise that was worked out. And that's gone back and forth, back to 25% and grounds. One of the problems that you do have is that petition comes in with grounds, and there's a question about whether the facts stated, that is, what the public official is alleged to have done, are actually fit into one of the grounds that are stated in the statute. And then, if you do have to make that decision, who's going to make it? Is it going to be the clerk? Some of those things are the reasons that some people felt that it was easier just to say, any grounds that you want, just restate some reason, but we'll put a higher percentage on the signature requirement. But, I think just a philosophical argument one way or the other to which way we're not to go.
This is not a question to leave it in. Are we in discussion on this?
Not yet.
I have real heartburn with, as Mitch says, with that amendment. It would appear to me that if we are going to be responsible individuals, run for office and get elected, and I'm talking on a municipal level now, if because someone didn't like the way you combed your hair or spoke out in meetings in the council, for instance, something like that, that this would be grounds for recall. And to me, I think we're penalizing people by asking them to run for elected office and then just saying, well, they can get rid of you by just voting wrong in their perspective. And to give you an illustration of that, one thing on voting wrong, bringing up recently in the legislature the royalty oil contracts, when we voted to send them back to committee, I received, I can't tell you how many phone calls from the district involved thinking I had voted wrong. And if that would be grounds for a recall, that part of the district could have recalled me. And take it right down to the municipal level on the same situation. I think that if you're going to ask people to put their reputation and integrity at stake when they run for office, then to have them recalled should also involve realistic grounds that they have done something really wrong to have them recalled.
Lee? So one of the things that, to share an observation I had around here, if you recall, Juneau 3 years ago asked the Department of Transportation to change the time zone for Florida Southeast to get closer to Anchorage. And some local folks were upset with that, and got a charter amendment passed that said that Juno, by gosh, would go back to Pacific time, and the assembly wouldn't do anything to get us off of Pacific time. And when the assembly merely sent a letter back to the DOT saying, here's what happened, and we request that you put us back on Pacific, and didn't actively pursue that, there was a recall petition coming out. And they got enough signatures to recall to put five of them on the ballot. The election ultimately failed, and they didn't get recalled. But what happened in the meantime was once they had those petitions filed, between then and the time they had the election, everybody expected the assembly to stop doing things because part of those people were going to be recalled. And I think there was that sort of a feeling on the assembly too. And government just sort of came to a halt for about 6 weeks. They were all not afraid, but they all felt they shouldn't do anything. The public felt that, and it can bring, if there are a lot of people that are subject to recall, it can have an adverse effect on getting the public's business done.
We had a similar situation when the Ketchikan gave the borough in a land disposal on how the borough should, at what price the borough should dispose of land. There was a petition for recall for several members of the borough assembly. As it turned out, the municipal attorney, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe this is right, ruled that the grounds weren't there, and so therefore it didn't happen. The land today, and this was a year ago last October, the land today still isn't disposed of. However, government sort of got back together again, made another decision. It was a vote of the people then of how that they would like to see the land disposed of. So I guess what I'm saying here is when these kinds of issues come up in our community, it boils up, but if we have a process by which it you could just recall the people, that becomes the issue instead of the issue of what you need to get satisfied in your community. And so in this case, now it is being satisfied. It wasn't all that easy, as I'm sure the time zone change wasn't here, but it finally goes away and things get taken care of. And there really wasn't a good reason to recall anybody. And obviously, in the next election, a couple of these people could have been voted out, and they weren't. So, you know, the process took care of itself, even though there was some real heated discussion during the time. And I think there was 800-900 signatures on a recall petition and all those other things. Process did get taken care of, and I think that's really what we want in our communities. And you don't want to get rid of some fellow who very well might be a good legislator, or borough assemblyman, and our city councilman, and then just to settle one issue. I think in election time they can take care of those kind of things, unless it's a definite legal thing that's spelled out.
Yeah. It seems to me that the question is, do you want to be able to recall people for political reasons, that is because they made decisions that are different from your feelings, or do you want to be able to recall them only because they've done something wrong, that is legally wrong, they've failed to attend meetings, they don't have a duty to attend meetings, they've gotten caught with their hand in a cookie jar, or they've done something that's legally wrong, and then provide a mechanism for letting the voters recall them. That seems to me to be the question.
Any further discussion?
Thank you.
Hearing none, I will entertain a motion to rescind our action of last year.
So moved.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Amendment 3 defines the intent of eminent domain process as written. Pretty straightforward. Is there a motion to reaffirm our action of last year?
I so moved.
Your objection?
Just for a matter of information.
Point of discussion.
I'm reading this and it says, as written. Now, does that mean the amendment number 3?
Yes. As you go farther on in the pack, there were the actual amendments that were adopted last year.
Well, then, is this amendment say that, is this a criticism of the amendment that says the statement may not have met the intent of allowing municipalities to exercise the right of amendment?
Let's see, I'm not.
Or stating the one that it might not have met the intent.
I think it was the original bill that was written that didn't meet the intent.
Yeah, we should find out about that before we
okay.
Move on. Or come back to it later, maybe.
Sure, we can come back to it later, and staff will check on it. Okay, let's go on to Amendment 4. It lowers the minimum value of property to be foreclosed upon without notice to the owner by certified mail to $20,000 from the proposed limit of $100,000. Presently, as now written in current statutes, it's the property of any value must be notified. HB 172 puts that limit at $100,000. And the Amendment 4, which was adopted last year, deleted $100,000 and put it at $20,000.
Representative Miller,
yes.
I have on my copy of this amendment that presently property of $10,000 value must be notified.
Oh, it is.
Instead of any value.
On mine, I have property of any value.
No,
yeah.
$10,000.
Oh, $10,000. Oh, okay. Okay, so what this amendment would do would be to move it from the present level, which is now currently on the books, $10,000, to $20,000, but as HB 172 is written, that level is $100,000, which is pretty high, in my feeling. So I believe it was a good amendment that was adopted last year.
I move that we reaffirm the action.
With your objection?
Just
for point,
sure. Purpose.
Representative McBride.
I can't remember this one last year. The discussion on it.
I don't either. That's why I wanted Tamara Cook. Was the one that really worked on this thing. The rationale behind.
Maybe we could ask Mr. Sharp. Would anybody mind?
Sure, that would be fine.
To kind of tell us a little about it, so he recalls. Mr. Sharp, by the way, sat in on a good share of this last year.
During the foreclosure procedure, there are several opportunities for the property owner to come in and redeem the property. This is the last of those, and this figure applies not to notification to the property owner, but to the banks, to the lien holders. And in fact, it used to be that you did not have to notify lien holders. When something came up in Anchorage where they foreclosed on some property, sold it, and it turned out that it wasn't a bank, it was apparently a private security holder, was not notified, and finally foreclosed for $100 worth of taxes, and this person had, you know, $50,000 worth of security interest in it. So the legislature adopted something that required notice go to security holders, and that's what this deals with, is a security holder. One of the problems is that you don't always know who the security holders are. If they come in and informed us, that they have a right to do under the present statute, we make a record of that, and we give them notification of what happens. What this requires then is that we go out and do a title search. And that was a reason they put in that you didn't have to notify everybody by the security interest, but just those with a substantial interest in it need to be notified.
Oh.
So, property owner still gets as much notice as he ever got. But this just deals with those who have a security interest in the property. It gives them one last chance to come in and redeem. So the property owner himself is not affected by this amendment.
Wait, do you remember why the $100,000
is there? No, I don't. Same rationale a lot of members are
talking
about legislative bodies,
including
assemblies.
Ripping the belt.
Well, the best person I would think who's been with us from the very beginning, not to downgrade Lee or Jenny Chitwood, but Cameron Cook, who's been involved with it from a legal point of view from the beginning.
She was going to be here on another bill that we were going to deal with. However, she couldn't be here. So she was, but she couldn't be here today. However, this was an amendment that was adopted last year.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
If we were looking at it in this way, and how do you see the difference between $10,000 and $20,000? And that's really what we're talking about here, unless we propose to keep the limit at 100,000.
Well, there probably isn't a lot of property out there, real property out there, that's worth less than $20,000. There probably wouldn't be that much difference. Although, if you're less expensive property, oftentimes it does go foreclosure because people have properties not too valuable, generally isn't developable, and they just let it go for taxes. There may not be that much difference. The big difference is between 100,000, which is upward, if you do have some substantial value, dropping from 100 down to 20. There's a big difference. There may not be that much difference between 20 and 10.
Would you see very many people ever being hurt using the difference between 100 then and 20 or 10?
Well, maybe your municipality, because they're going to have to do a title search on less valuable property, and it becomes more and more expensive then to finally foreclose on that property. It's an added expense, and you're not going to be getting as much in taxes out of a $10,000 piece of property. You're not going after as much as you are after 20 or 100,000. You don't have as much at stake, but you're still having to go through an added title search to find if you have any security.
Well, yeah, technically, yeah. Well, it's 100 as written in 172. Although currently, it in reality, it's 100 or 10. Excuse me.
And we would suggest it be increased to 20.
Right. That's the net effect. Currently, it's 10. It'll go to 20. However, in the bill, it's 100, and we drop to 20.
I remove my objection.
Any further objection? Hearing none. Short. Amendment 5. Specifies the date that Chapter 45 of Title 29, as written in House Bill 172, will go in effect. The amendment will avoid the possibility of a split tax year and will provide lead time for the municipality planning and department assistance for mandated state and federal programs. Is there a motion to reaffirm our action of last year?
I so move.
Your objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Let's go to Amendment 6 of last year, so I already said that was. Amendment 7. There has been some discussion on Amendment 7. It's Amendment 7 deleted the greenhouses from being considered under a special lower assessment for property taxes on farmland use or farm use land. The special taxing provisions for farm use land is designed to help farmers resist pressures to subdivide their land. Okay, Amendment 7 was adopted last year, which removed the greenhouse from the special consideration. Therefore, first of all, I'd like to open it up for committee discussion. Is there any discussion on it? Representative McBride.
I remember our discussions last year, and it just might help to do this. The purpose of that part of the law is to protect farmland from development. So then you kind of get into, why would you want to protect farmland from development? And then, of course, you would say, because you raise food. And then that's how it got from there to greenhouses. And I have a little hard time getting from the original purpose to greenhouses. And I think I probably voted against that last year, if I recall right. And I've thought about that quite a bit. And of course, the tie between farmland and greenhouses is they both raise food. And I see some things. For an example, you could put a solar collector on your side of your house and raise a few tomatoes in there and sell to your neighbors or your local grocery store, and you'd get a tax exemption for that. I suspect that you could then go on to your, and maybe that's true even now, your garden, peddle a little zucchini squash to the local grocery store. think that was the intent. The intent was to save farmland for the production of food.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're getting too far over on the production of food means that you should get a tax exemption.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
Any further discussion? Well, entertain either a motion to rescind our action or to affirm our action. Doesn't matter to me.
I'd move to retain our action, which deletes greenhouse from the inventory.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. In Amendments 8 and 9, we had Amendment 8 deals with the required tax exemption, which certain new languages defines development for implementation of a required federal tax program. This was addressed and resolved in Senate Bill 260. Amendment 9 was relating to the Alaska Public Utilities Commission. The net effect of the amendment is to prohibit municipalities from regulating utilities unless the type of regulations proposed or the particular utility is not subject to regulation by the Alaska Public Commission. It was dealt with in House Bill 274, and then we have Amendment number 10, let me find that, which deals
legal services.
Right. My understanding is that 8 and 9 is taken care of in Amendment 10 to bring which would, once if 172 passes the legislature, Amendment 10 would bring the two things that were dealt with in Senate Bill 260 and House Bill 274 in compliance in 172. Is that my correct assumption? Okay. So what they have asked us to do is to revoke Amendments 8 and 9 and to adopt Amendment 10, which would take care of 8 and 9.
I so move.
Okay, so I'll give a minute for people in committee to look at it.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think we had objected to, I think that developed thing was defeated.
No,
last
it was passed.
Was it passed here in the committee?
No, it was passed on the floor.
On the floor, yeah, but not in the committee. We had left that out. I do have.
Which amendment is that?
8. May I ask a question, Mr. Chairman?
Certainly.
What happens in this case where Senate Bill 260 was passed by both houses?
Okay, right now that is law, and from my understanding is that Amendment 10 would take those two laws which were passed and put them into 172 if they were passed by both houses and signed by the governor.
If this does not happen, then the legislation that was passed last year, because House Bill 172 is a complete Title 29, will be left out of the new Title 29. So what they did last year will open up.
Are you saying that the legislation we passed last year will not go into Title 29 if we pass 172 without that in there? Okay.
Because it's coming after, and it wasn't originally written in 172. Legislation that was later passed.
Well, then when you think it out, if we leave it alone. The legislation was passed, so the majority of people in both houses must agree with the legislation.
Right.
So if we leave it in there now, then, in other words, pass number 10 amendment.
Right.
Then, if we got any disagreement with it, it's best to take it. In other words, what I'm saying is that it probably gives 172 a better chance of passing by leaving it in or adopting number 10.
Right. Well, it would bring those two bills in. And that were passed last year.
Yeah.
Right.
That sounds good.
Okay. Representative Phillips, you had a question?
Well,
or
not
concern.
Only a question. I'll vote no.
Okay, so let's have a roll call vote. The motion was to, should we take these in separate motion or can we take them all in one? Okay, the motion would be to rescind the action on Amendments 8 and 9 and to adopt Amendment 10. Representative Cato?
Yes.
Representative Phillips?
No.
Representative McBride?
Yes.
And I vote yes. Motion carries. Okay, then we have Amendment 11, which is a new amendment, and it, I believe you all have it in your packet. What it does, it defines hospital. And it says hospital means a licensed hospital determined by the Department of Health and Social Services, or to be a general or a special hospital. The term excludes a government facility operated wholly supported by the state or federal government. What it does is adds the word or special. Representative McBride.
This is obviously some special interest.
Yeah.
So who are we talking about?
Okay, here is a letter from the Hospital Association.
Back your packet. Fourth page from the back, okay. So is this dated March 17th?
Right, right. It's the section as currently drafted in AS 29.60.120 in SB1 continues to discriminate against the Juneau Regional Rehabilitation Hospital by excluding it from hospital revenue sharing. This in spite of the fact that the facility was acquired to be built to acute hospital standards and function. So it looks like it's basically addressing the Juneau Regional Rehabilitation Hospital.
Representative Miller.
Representative
Cato. The Juneau facility, I think, is the only one that is considered a special hospital. And then this designation was put in so that it would not be excluded in the bill. And I very definitely advocate going along with this. We worked on this in Hess last year quite thoroughly on the definition of special hospital.
What is special hospital?
It's the rehabilitation center that had to be built under the certificate of need with all the
St. Jude Center?
I don't know, it isn't called St. Jude Center, is it?
I'm not sure if it is or not. All it does refers to
it
is...
What is the name of that? Excuse me, I'm sorry.
Oh, go right ahead.
It's the Alcohol and Drug Abuse Central Agency.
Right.
It's a treatment facility out there for mostly for acute alcoholism problems. St. Jude Center is a privately operated facility for handicapped children. Quite
different. Right.
Lee, are we opening up a can of worms that we might be sorry for here that you can see in any way? And I realize you being a Juneau resident might be.
I hope you're not. The problem is, as stated in the letter, we had to build that to acute care hospital standards. We had to man it to those standards. But we only provide a single medical service. But the law says you have to be a general hospital, which means that you have to have an emergency ward, an OB ward, a number of other things. If you had, say, a burn hospital like they have in Seattle, that would be a special hospital.
Right.
complicated. One to treat another specific type of disease, it would not be a general hospital, and that's the problem. We have to behave just like a hospital, except a general hospital, except that we don't have all the broad treatment.
If I'm not wrong, like even just a children's hospital would fall into a special hospital, which
it may very likely
with just children.
It may very likely fall.
Right.
Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Is there a motion to accept amendment? Which amendment was that?
11.
Amendment number 11.
So
okay. Hearing, is there objection? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Then amendment number 13, it moves all effective dates to be changed to the present year. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Let's go back to amendment number 3 then. Here's the yeah, maybe so. I'm a little lost on this one now myself. Amendment number 3.
Eminent domain. If I might add.
Go right ahead.
What,
McBride.
According to what we have here that says amendment number 3, it says, as written, the statement may have not met the intent of allowing municipalities to exercise the right of eminent domain. Does that mean that the amendment as written or the title as written?
It looks like the bill, because I've got the bill in front of me, and they're in one on page 76, and in the section before it, they're talking of garbage and trash and collection, and then it goes in the same paragraph. It says a municipality may exercise the right of eminent domain to determine fair market value.
Okay, that's the problem. You exercise the power of eminent domain to acquire property, but you have to pay fair market value. The way you determine fair market value is to get an appraisal of it. You don't go out and condemn it just to determine what fair market value is. If we negotiate with the carrier to acquire the certificate and pay him fair market value, we can determine fair market value by getting an appraisal, and both of us agree on fair market value. We don't have to condemn it to determine. It's a misleading statement that the language will be correct.
So amendment 3 would correct that, you're saying.
Okay. Is there a motion to reaffirm our action?
I so move.
Is there objection or point of discussion?
I guess I'm right back where I was now. Is reaffirming our action is what we want to do?
You should be changing that so that...
By reaffirming our action, we're deleting determined fair market value and inserting acquire the certificate.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. I have no objection.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. And that takes care of the amendments on 172. They will go to drafting, and as soon as we get it back from drafting, this committee will be passing it on to the next committee of referral. Okay, we have one other item to take care of before we get to House Bill 330, yes. In our actions last week, or the week before, in dealing with 330, we did some things that legal says that we couldn't do. So at this time, I'm going to turn it over to staff and let them explain what we did that we weren't supposed to do. They have a better handle on it than I do at this point. Right here.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, in your packet you will find the original bill, which is the very first one. It's on the outside of your packet, I'm sorry. Your original bill, and then the second page is what you decided that you wanted to put in the H section.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, remember? Now, the problem that legal had was we establish a service area within the land to be disposed of, and you put that right after the Commissioner of Natural Resources. The Commissioner of Resources can't do that. It's only a municipality that can do that. So we've authorized her to establish a service area, and that's not, we can't do that. Only a municipality can do that. Yes, sir.
Could you get language written that you know what we were trying?
Well, yes, I do. And so in going on further, if you go to the next one, you will find the work draft that Tamara wrote up for us. And she said basically what you had in this work draft, which is the only changes she's made actually, is the word shall from will and the regulations adopted under AS 2933 and the fact that you're to construct streets and other improvements within the subdivisions needed to comply with subdivision regulations adopted under AS 2933. You basically did what you wanted to do in the first place, and then we kind of got carried away and started reaffirming and readopting and going further than you really needed to go. The only thing she wanted to bring to your attention is that instead of just saying other improvements, she wants you to understand that you should comply with what is the local subdivision regulations, etc. If you just went and left that open without stating the local subdivision, you could open a can of worms where you could go
ahead. You did state that.
Well,
remember you mentioned it.
What we wrote down, and other improvements required by local ordinance. And she said it is not an ordinance, it is a regulation. And there's where her problem was.
Boy.
Okay.
Our subdivision regulations are an ordinance.
The other thing that she wanted you to understand is the platting board shall by regulation require the Commissioner of Natural Resources to deposit money in an escrow account. Now, if you leave shall in there, you are taking the option away from the platting board or to work back and forth with the state because you are requiring that the platting board has to enforce this regulation. And if the municipality or if the state says, we aren't going to do it, the whole deal will fall apart.
And that's why we're doing this.
Well, she just wanted you to understand that, Representative Walker.
Well, and you're saying by using the word will, that then it'd be subject to negotiation with the state and borough?
Yes, in the very first one, it says may. It doesn't say will, it says may.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And by saying shall. Now, Representative Copeland is here, and we did run this by him, and he had no problem with the changes that Tam Cook did make. And she apologized that she was just here and could not be here.
As long as the meat of what we agreed to
right.
is in
yeah.
there, that's all I care
right.
about.
So,
mm-hmm.
we should probably we need to adopt this.
Yes, adopt the
okay.
So we have to rescind the other motion?
I think we have to rescind the other motion.
And then
right.
adopt this motion.
Right.
Or
I think you're right. Entertain a motion to rescind our action on what to do with that. I ask for a motion to rescind our action on February 8th in adopting the committee substitute for House Bill 330. Is there a motion?
I so move.
Is there objection?
Ask one question. Does this honestly then give the municipality a chance to negotiate, or does this give the state the right to say, well, we're not gonna do it, and so that's the way it is for this spell.
Well, if you give the, you're giving the municipality the option by use the word may and will, you're not in the case of shall, there is no option for either party. Whether the all municipalities will exercise that power, of course, is the result of it.
Well, by recent, we can discuss this, this the substitute for House Bill 330.
I move the second committee substitute for House Bill 330 be brought before us. Be accepted.
Don't think it would be the second committee.
Don't. Maybe just a
just committee substitute.
Okay, just
committee substitute for House Bill number
right.
Yeah, 330.
Okay. See, is there objection?
Be adopted.
This would have it before us, then we could just.
Yeah. I wonder if one more time we could impose on the municipal attorney from and asked him how he would see may and shall there.
I would have to see the language you're talking about.
Here you go, Lane.
You can tell us for sure.
I keep wondering. It's that legal sheet there. It's right, right there, that shall.
Oh. As a condition of approving a subdivision plan of developed state land, the planning board shall, by regulation, require. If you replace shall with may, then you put yourself in a position, the municipality in a position of negotiating what they will do. With shall, it's true. There's no room for negotiation. They must put the money in. They don't, then there's no subdivision. Now, if the municipality decides that the state is going to have to put the improvements in, and they want the deposit, they have the authority with the word may. Or they can say to DNR, you shall put it in. So they still have the option of requiring the state to put it in, but they don't have to. They can negotiate.
Okay. They can
Have you had some state disposals within your borough?
We had a few on Shelter Island.
Would I hate to put the municipality in where there's never going to be any land disposals, which that could be the what could happen with the word shall. On the other hand, I realize the problems that some municipalities have had. I wonder, is the state in a position then to say, well, either you do it our way or you're not getting any disposal, and all the disposals will be made someplace else?
With May, you at least allow the municipality the option of negotiating downward. Shall, that may kick all the disposals to some other line, some other area anyway. It puts in the hands of the municipality the power to say, we don't want disposals, we want disposals of state land, but we don't want them unless they're improved. It puts them in that position of making that sort of policy decision about what they want the municipality to be doing.
So you think that you're strengthening the at least strengthening the municipality's position?
You're giving them more flexibility. Now, if they cower before DNR, you may not be giving them very much power except to backpedal. But it certainly gives them the opportunity to negotiate something like this.
Thank you. Okay, we have a motion to put committee substitute for 330 on the table in front of us. Is there still objection to put it on? Did we amend it later? Okay, hearing no objection, it's in front of us. Is there discussion or motions or? It's my feeling that that I would rather see the word may to give the municipalities at least the option
to negotiate with DNR, because there may end up being no land disposals of any sort. If maybe they can negotiate, you know, that the state will deposit at least half the money. That's just my feeling on it.
I guess my feeling is this land disposal has been a process that's gone on for several years, and we've learned a lot of things, and it's a tough thing to accomplish. And I guess my feeling would be that we use the word may, and if it doesn't work out, then we'll just have to say shall.
Is there a motion to...
I would so move to change the word shall there.
On line, I guess that's line 15, it looks like. I can't tell.
I have a question.
Ripping a blocker.
Yeah, Lee is here. Lee, are you confident that the word regulation is the proper word? I mean, I still believe that it's ordinance, and I would hope that we're not...
Juneau is a home rule municipality, so that part doesn't apply to us. Our regulations have been adopted by ordinance. They all appear in the ordinance. And I think that's generally the way it is elsewhere, but I do believe that Title 29 gives the planning board authority to adopt its own regulations. In other words, the procedural regulations or substantive regulations and street width and things like that. I don't recall because, again,
my concern is that this possibly could be defective. However, if Tamara very definitely specifically use the word, well, then I think we should probably trust her, but it sounds a bit unreasonable.
Title 29, as I recall, does appear to give the planning board the authority to adopt its own regulations, which has always been sort of a question to me as to how that should be. It really should be the assembly.
Mm-hmm. And
or the
assembly
giving them authority to adopt regulations and setting up standards for this. Rather than making
correct.
It essentially an independent body from the assembly, that I have a policy from.
Mm-hmm. Would it be improper to you to go ahead and comply with subdivision regulations or local ordinance? She specifically dropped the word ordinance. I was.
You could drop the word by regulation. The words by regulations allow the planning board to require.
That's correct.
That would be another way to, how they do it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, no matter how they do it, they can do it.
They could just do it by motion on a particular plan.
Uh-huh.
Right.
When would we open up a whole can of worms? In other words, then it seems like this should sort of be a decision by the political decision, especially if we're going to use the word may instead of shall. Becomes a sort of a political consideration then, and if we and if they can make their own regulations, and now I understand that a little better, well then that would bypass anything that the borough assembly might have to say about it.
A concern of mine.
Yeah, and the planning board.
It sounds like
the planning board. Maybe we don't want to use planning board. Maybe we want to say local government.
Or the municipality.
Yes, or the municipality. Why are we even using, in our borough, our planning board can't do anything. If the assembly wishes to override it or fails to override it, then it's not okay. And so that's my concern here. Why don't we use municipality?
Okay. Planning board was used in the original
language. Right. Okay, but
so
means we're cleaning it up and making it safe.
I think the sections that this, 2933-150, the sections that it appears in are those that deal with the planning board procedures and authority.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be, you'll probably find the sections before and after talk about the planning board. But I share the concern you have about who should be making these
There's
decisions.
There's something the matter with this, I can definitely tell you that. It's taking a little while to find out what. I think the safest thing is just saying municipality. And if they allow their planning board to do it, fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But
by ordinance, they can delegate that authority.
Yeah.
And establish the conditions under which they will require the
However, if we're talking, I mean, if the part of 172 is talking to the planning board only in this, then what would you be fouling up if you put municipality in there?
Well, the thing is that in so many municipalities, planning boards cannot act without the authority given to them by the assembly or whatever, and that would be my concern. This is a new power that we're giving them. And wouldn't it better be in the hands of the elected officials? If they wish to delegate that power, they can.
I guess one more question then. In your municipality, and I suspect that most of it would be somewhat similar, can the assembly override the regulations of the planning board? And
well, our planning board has not adopted any regulations. They go
strictly by
our planning ordinance is what they're supposed to go by. If they
that's
do something that someone doesn't like, it may be appealed to the assembly. Unless somebody brings it to the assembly on appeal, they can't get to it.
I think that's where we go.
I see. It's all by ordinance.
It's possible replacing planning board in there by the word municipality to make it closer to what we all think should be happening.
Mr. Chairman, could we have staff check that out?
Certainly. We do have a motion on the floor right now to delete the word shall and insert may. Is there objection to that?
Well,
or we could, or you could withdraw the motion and we could have.
I guess we could use may and find out if we can use it. Because we'd want to use the same language if we use municipalities.
Right.
So I think that part would be all right.
Right. Okay. Is there objection to the motion? To order. Okay, we've amended shell to May, and we'll hold 3:30, and we'll have staff look into it and see if by inserting municipalities in there instead of planning board, if that gets to what we want. Okay, and next on the agenda, and I'm sorry, Lilo, that we took so long, but we had some housekeeping to do. I prefer this point.
Statutes are in proper order and form and understandable and achieve their goals that should be rushed through.
We have before us a sponsored substitute for House Bill 442, and with us is its representative Copenin, which introduced the piece of legislation. And with that, I will turn the floor over to Neil.
Thank you. The sponsor substitute that you have before you, you have a position paper drawn up by my aide, Ryan Allen, and includes definitions for a volunteer fire department, fire rescue station at the end of the bill, and a clarification of the responsibilities of the Department of Community Regional Affairs and State Fire Marshal. So to avoid, we've changed keep from confusing the Department of Community and Regional Affairs with fire departments. We've inserted volunteer fire department where it's appropriate on that. The definitions are placed in the bill so as to meet some of the objections of the State Fire Marshal. I think that their hasty reading of the bill before led them to believe that they would have to inspect every fire department in the state to find out whether they came up to standards, and I believe that's why they asked for 9 new positions. I agree that they probably require a number of more fire marshals, but not the right set of regulations or to enforce this bill. The intent of the bill, as I mentioned before, was that they would set the standards. So here we have written into it, into the bill, page 3, numbers this number, definitions that show what fire rescue station is. Permits are to use exclusively for fire and rescue operations, the principal shelter for at least one motorized vehicle fire equipment. The base station for at least 8 firefighters. In other words, this sets standards that the department has to meet. And also, the supplemental grants are set up on a rational system. They're intended to be, of course, no challenge there. And the size of that very much would depend on any given year's budget grant. It wouldn't, the point system is used rather than a dollar figure for those, because I think that that's something that should be within the purview of the legislature in drawing up the budget, the challenge grant portion. And cutting it, the tighter definition has allowed the Community and Regional Affairs to drop a new fiscal note, which is half of the original fiscal note. Any particular questions?
Is there a question? Yeah, how much was that fiscal note now? I remember it was quite
five
high.
$5 billion.
Now?
Yes, we're 5 million.
To
yes.
From 10.
It is possible to move the legislation to another chapter, for example, chapter 91, which is not the same line item as revenue sharing, but it would, under the current rush to put the budget through, probably guarantee that there'd be no funds for the existing per capita funding program, about $75,000. Unless we rewrite the budget to include a line item for that. If we postpone the effective date, that would allow us to get a line item into the fiscal year 86 budget to match the legislation. Another alternative. That wouldn't affect the per capita program this year, which is in Community and Regional Affairs for about $75,000.
Is there further questions? We do have a letter from the state fire marshal's office. He couldn't be here, and he tried to have someone here. However, I do not see that person. But there are some concerns from the state fire marshal's office.
Which state is the letter?
It's
a memo to the committee members in discussion. On Friday, Shirley spent 2 hours with Sam Neal of the state fire marshal's office.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
And down in the second paragraph, I think it's started of the meat of it. He feels that there are good and bad points about the bill. His primary concern that it may be before its time, SB 81, calling for a task force on fire prevention and control, if it is passed, will aid the fire service departments to revamp and remodel their own rules and regulations. And then it goes on. I think I'll let Shirley, since Shirley is the one that spent 2 hours discussing this bill with Sam, if you just give us some of the high points that you covered in your conversation, some of the points that he had concern about.
Okay, I discussed this with Mr. Neal on Friday, and he had really two specific ones, well, three, let's put it like that. The first one that he had was that, in his words, it was like setting him up as God, and he really did not want to have the authority to spend so much money or without any control, which is where the line in the bill which puts the state fire marshal as controller of the program. I believe he was talking about the first one.
7 and 8, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Page 2?
Yeah, 7 and 8.
Mm-hmm.
Supplemental grants should be awarded to fire base control points by fire marshals.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. This doesn't give him any discretionary power What it does is regulatory, instead of regulatory power, he couldn't make decisions between different, it's not intended, and I don't read it, the legal language is giving him the power to decide between different departments. It's essentially a regulatory power to say that these are the criteria that departments have to meet. Whoops. The money would be spent by Community Regional Affairs, but since he is the fire marshals are the people with the technical expertise to set up the criteria, that's why it's brought in. There.
In answer to that, Representative Copeland, he gave us, he sent to us a packet on the regulations on volunteer fire departments, and I've marked them for you. There's very little as to defining exactly what a volunteer fire department is and how the criteria, and he's having a problem with that, and that's one of the things that they intend to do in the task force, is look at criteria. He said at this time he has 240 volunteer fire departments under his auspice, but he does have, in some cases he's never even been out there and does not have the staff or the money to go ahead and check up on them. There is available all kinds of training, but there is nothing in the statutes or in the administrative code to make people, or make these volunteer fire departments do it as the safety demand. He also said that he would like to see the two departments, Department of CNRA and the State Fire Marshal's Department, work together on looking at this type of grant, where he would set a criteria, but he would not administer the funds. He did not prefer that at all. He asked that he have time to work on this governor's task force, and they have a definition of 120 days as far as completion time on it. And he felt that they needed to work out their own problems first before we added more bills to compound it. He thought that his legislation had some very good points. It's just that it was just a little bit before its time at this point. And that many of the things that the task force intended to do, as far as his notes were concerned, because he will be on the task force, is going to be taken care of already, that this legislation addressed. He said that if you would like to postpone this legislation, he will be in the Juneau area on March 3rd. That was when he had next planned to come down here, and that he would sit down and talk with you at this time. It's your pleasure, obviously.
We can also teleconference, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sure we could do that. You know, it's up to
you. Well, I hope you have to read it a bit more, because I understand it does call for what he attempted to be drafted is to require cooperation between the two agencies, with CNRA sending the money out subject to the criteria. We do have the power as a legislature to set some minimum standards and statute from which they can work, and the on page 3, 2 at the bottom, we have a certain limited criteria you see there defining a volunteer fire department as one with 2/3 or more of its members defined as volunteers by the state fire marshal. The department is registered with the fire marshal, submits a roster of personnel that includes at least 8 members, and a list of elected officers, reports all the fires to the state fire marshal, and has a fire prevention program approved, and has a training program. We do have all of these. The reporting program is known as AMFERS, American Fire Incident Reporting System, and most departments cooperate. a department that isn't well enough organized to report fires on the AMFER system really doesn't fit. There are fire prevention programs that departments cooperate with, and there is a state training program that's rather modest but still exists with guidelines. Essentially, all they would have to do would be to approve the American Fire Institute's training programs, which is a national program that the fire reporting service nationally has as a base minimum guideline. So all we have the parts in place, and if we can, shall we say, force them to have to get a little coherence to the system and to limit it, essentially, say that you have, if a department is to get state money or state equipment, state purchased equipment and the like, that they do meet these particular guidelines. I have no objection to waiting until the fire marshal is able to come here, but I don't feel that in every case the legislature should leave to the agencies the drawing of regulations and wait the assurance that they will do it, because as I say, the bits and pieces have been created, but they haven't been brought into focus yet, and it's been some years. I think we have this with other agencies too.
I don't have any problem with that part of Milo's bill. I was looking, however, at the letter from the Department of Community and Regional Affairs, and they're addressing the amount of money, the funding, where was the funding to come from, and so on and so forth. Whereas your bill raises from $10 to $20 per capita, and then the $5,000 for each registered fire and rescue station. And my math isn't good enough to take 240 times 5,000 to be able to tell you. But, Milo, under what auspices or what situation did you plan that funding to come from? That the legislature would fund that every year?
Yeah,
it's $1.2 million.
If I may, I could explain a little bit of that. At present, there is a per capita funding program for volunteer fire departments, $10 per capita, outside the organized boroughs and municipalities. And that is administered through Department of Community and Regional Affairs. And it is funded along with all the other programs that are in that section of the statutes in chapters 88, 89, and 90 with a single line item. And that line item is approximately $57 million. That includes municipal revenue sharing, that's the bulk of it. But it also includes hospital programs and various other capital expenditure programs. So at present, that is the way the program is funded. Now, it has been suggested by CNRA that if the volunteer fire department program were to be expanded, it would be perhaps best to move this program out of chapter whatever it's in now, 89, I believe, and move it to 91 and create a separate budget item to cover that program. And that was one of the options that Milo suggested there in his introductory remarks. But at present, it's lumped right in with municipal revenue sharing. Can I see your question?
Well, that answers the question about the $20. How about the
$5,000? It's my understanding that since it's written into the same chapter, it would also come out of that money.
Which then would raise that
fund. The discretionary grant, isn't it, there's no money for it yet. That would have to
come
up.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. That's the point I'm attempting to make. Mm-hmm. And so that you said that fund stood at $59 million now.
I believe so. I'm not sure the exact figure.
Yeah, or whatever. Yeah. And then from line 22, the $5,000 Randy's real fast. Yeah, it came up with $1.2 million, which then would raise that line item.
But, correct.
Yeah, and what I wanted to do was get...
Well, no, actually, that's included in the, excuse me,
in the fiscal note that CNRA provided, their total fiscal note, which they reduced to $5 million, includes the fire station fund and the 5,000 items in addition to the per capita.
Well, yeah, it's 12 million. That's
yeah.
What I mean. That's
yeah,
what I wondered 1 million. Yeah, and I was wondering why I was pursuing something that was only 1 million when I thought in my mind there was a lot more than that.
Well,
my math wasn't very good.
I think the consideration that the department is getting at is
that
if that, you know, this X number of dollars, if the bill is passed and if the legislature does not approve the extra amount of dollars,
mm-hmm.
it will take away from the other programs involved in the title.
Last year, in my experience with the Community Regional Affairs Finance Subcommittee, we dickered very much about a number of small line items and then approved the massive amount for 88, 89, and 90, and which is very largely, I found, discretionary because the department has no way of accurately forecasting the demand from year to year. So it's a sort of floating fund that goes from year to year that they hope to pay the charges from. And in general, they have, because of the necessity of doing it that way, have overestimated and tend to pull several, seems to be with 5 million or so, from previous year into the next year because one of these peculiar things where we set up a series of criteria, but until the reports come in for the municipality, one doesn't know where it's going. I'd also point out that the last year's budget had a number of specific line items like this introduced by various members of the legislature, including myself, for grants to fire service areas within their districts or adjacent to their district. In this case, if this funding went through, that would tend to remove that necessity from year to year. It would at least give departments some stability to go along on. So that this is my feeling in looking at the budget, and I cannot quantify that at most, if not all of this money is available either from the item itself, the line item in the Community Regional Affairs budget, or and from the money that would ordinarily be included by, shall we say, the one-third split that members of the legislature put in.
We have Nadine here from CNRA, if you would like to testify on this.
My only comment would be that basically where the money is going to come from, as far as that goes, and I'm not familiar enough with the different line items and the amount of money. There's $57 million in revenue share. I think this is going to title of the state.
89.
Yeah, 89. 89. That's our problem with that. Like, I know we don't have $5 million in revenue share. We might, in fact,
do you know how much money was carried on from last year?
No,
that is true. I was struck last year by the fact that that was one fund that tended to collapse in the succeeding year because of the necessity of funding it large enough to take in possibilities rather than absolute figures. So mm-hmm. if you can't think that's what's going on.
No, I'll definitely check out. I know that we have a concern and based on the survey that definitely and that's why I'm here. I'm looking at something.
Representative Walker.
It could be addressed by by an extended effective date permit.
Yeah, I don't think that they carried any money. Mm-hmm. 2 years in a row, they've shorted the road program, so, and it's because it's the last one, and they have not paid the full amount. So I don't think there's been anything.
I think it's my attention that on Monday we'll try to set up a teleconference with the state fire marshal, and at the same time we'll either have Mr. Smith or Mr. Griffin does the okay, we'll have try to have one of those from the Department of Community and Regional Affairs, and we will retake the bill up at that time so we can have better discussion face to face with the individuals involved that have a concern with the bill.
I don't know if it's appropriate time, but this committee has several bills in finance that require funding, and they were moved out of committee last year.
Mm-hmm.
It would be my suggestion that you research them and choose the ones that you can put your support behind, and then use your influence with the majority to move them from finance. There's a lot of committee time in the effort putting those bills. I don't know how many there are, but you probably know by now. One of them was the one that increased the amount for snow removal, and many of the communities are already out of money.
Right. I will take that. We will go over the bills again, sure, and I.
There's several.
This coming Wednesday, we have another joint session with the Senate, and it is to deal with the HJR 69 and SJR 41, disapproving the local boundary commission for the annexation territory of the city of Hoonah. These individual committees are the sponsors. However, this is being sponsored at the request of Representative Gusendorf, which Hoonah falls into his district. And at that time, we will discuss it. The last meeting we had when there was a question if there was any more concern, at that time, neither Senator Ferguson or myself knew that there was another concern. Both the concerns regarding the city Hoonah was brought up to us after that meeting. It seems that the city fathers of Hoonah had met the next night and voted that after consideration, they voted they didn't want the annexation after all. So we will be in joint House and Senate teleconferencing. It'll be here on Wednesday at 3:15, regular scheduled time. So is there any other business or concerns?
We have one question maybe that staff could look into it for. And I think that there is probably a finding that this committee should make before they decide on something like that. I don't know that there is, but I would suspect that there is. And it would be nice to know what it is so that we're on firmer ground when we make these decisions. It sounds like they're going to come up on a regular basis. And quite often you will find when you have such a commission that there's a certain finding that the committee should make before it rules on.
We will try to have the information to you regarding this to you as soon as possible so that going into the meeting you won't be cold. We'll try to get it to you as soon as before the meeting if we possibly can.
I think the Boundary Commission was very clear on what they must base their findings on.
Right.
They have the actual criteria. And if there is any such thing for us, we should know.
Right. Is there anything further? Hearing none, the adjourn the committee at 4:42. Thank you.